Malk, and I represent the appellant Gotain Service Stations. Your Honor, it is respectfully submitted to the court that the decision of Judge Leinenweber in this case, that Jackson was not an exempt manager, was not only contrary to the overwhelming facts of this case, but it was based on a misconstruction of the applicable law. There are certain undisputed points in this case, are certainly uncontradicted and undisputed. The first is that the short test, as defined in the U.S. Department of Labor regulations, applies, and that is that the employer only has to show that the employee was paid more than $250 per week, which is not disputed in this case, and that he customarily and regularly directed the work of two or more other full-time employees. That's undisputed in this case. Also undisputed, or certainly uncontradicted, is the fact that this car wash facility where Jackson was employed as a manager was an independent as well as a physically separated branch establishment of Gotain, and that Jackson was the sole manager of that facility during the period in question. Donald Adamchak, the general manager of Gotain, testified that this was a high-volume facility and that a manager was needed at that site. Now, the law, I think, has been fairly well established in this case. I cited the Murray versus Stuckey's case, both cases, to the effect that an employer is entitled under the Fair Labor Standards Act and the regulations to have one designated exempt executive in this type of facility.
But his primary duty wasn't in management, was it?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Wasn't he doing sweeping and cleaning up and washing windows?
You're right, Your Honor.
Didn't he testify that about 5% of his time was in management?
Yes, Your Honor, but that has already been covered by the cases as well. Matter of fact, in the Murray's case that I've cited, there the employee was held to be an exempt manager, even though he spent the manager spent between 60% up to 90% of their time in non-exempt duties.
This man said he spent 5%.
Well, that's right. But while he was performing those duties, along with the other hourly employees, he was also directing their work and managing them, and that is really the key factor on that point. Because
he couldn't hire and fire nor authorize any increases without the boss's. Okay, isn't that true?
Your Honor, if I may correct the court on that, with all due respect, I think the evidence was very clear on that point. I think it was just it was undisputed for all practical purposes. Jackson, the evidence was that Jackson performed all the duties of a manager. And this is by his own testimony as well as the testimony of others, of Adamchak and of Eddie Page, who was a co-employee of Jackson. He hired, fired, trained, and disciplined employees. He prepared their work schedules for the hourly employees and prepared the time sheets which formed the basis of their being paid. He was responsible for money collected from customers. He handled customer complaints, even had the key to the safe. These are all the indicia of a manager. And
was he entitled to overtime pay?
No, Your Honor, he was not. He was getting a
he
pay.
Was?
No, he was not. That's the whole point of the case. He was a manager on a fixed salary in excess of $250 a week. His primary duties were managerial. He met the short test in the sense that, as I say, the only other factor that had to be proven in this case was that he customarily and regularly directed the work of two other full-time employees. And I'd like to stress the fact that Judge Leinenweber, in his own opinion, on December the 12th of 2001, acknowledged that fact. And I'm quoting directly from his opinion, in which he said, it is true that normally, while Jackson was employed as a manager, Gotain employed at least two other full-time employees. I mean, that was right in the findings.
Well, there is no doubt that he had two other employees.
I don't think there was. I don't think there was any
but
dispute.
That's just one of the tests.
That is the second prong of that test. The first one was acknowledged that he was paid more than $250 a week.
There are three prongs, aren't there?
No, just two on the short test, Your Honor. That he'd be paid more than $250 per week, and that he customarily and regularly directed the work of two or more other full-time employees.
That he employs two two other full-time.
Full-time or the equivalent.
His primary duty is management.
Exactly.
Of the enterprise.
Yes, that is correct. I mean, that, in that sense, you're absolutely right.
So there are three requirements.
Well, in a sense, that is correct, although that's right. I think the word primary appears in the first prong of that. But in any event, as I say, the record is so clear, even by Jackson's own admission, as to what his duties were. He was on call all the time, and that was admitted. Eddie Page, all the hourly employees had his phone number when he wasn't even on the premises. Whenever there was a problem, they'd call him. He was the one who opened up the facility. He was the one who saw that the employees were there. He, as I say, participated in the hiring and firing process. I don't know what more you can show to show that his duties were primarily managerial. Plus the fact, as I say, in this type of facility, an employer is entitled to one exempt manager. I mean, it was a large, high volume facility. Jackson was the only one performing those particular duties that I just mentioned. He was their manager. He was designated as their manager, and he was the only one. And as I say, under the Murray case, I think it's pretty clear that under the Fair Labor Standards Act, that Gotain is entitled to have him as that one manager. But getting back to the point that I was making about the finding that we fulfilled this other prong of proof, and that is that Jackson was there were at least two other full-time employees. I say, Judge Lina Weber recognized that fact. Eddie Page, the co-employee, testified that there were a minimum of three, and sometimes as many as five full-time employees at the facility. Donald Adamshack testified that company policy was to have 138 hours of hourly employees during the slower months and 200 hours during the busier months. And he even testified that he admonished Jackson for not complying with that company policy. Now, the interesting thing is, I mean, where then did we go wrong in the sense of how do we end up on the short end of the decision? Well, Judge Lina Weber proceeded on a line of a rationale here, which is, and this is where I respectfully submit that he misconstrued the law. He went on the basis, first of all, an exhibit that Gotain presented, Exhibit 4A, showed that the employee that maybe a third of the time did not in fact work the 80-hour minimum during the period in question. But the evidence was, and this was undisputed and uncontradicted, every one of those employees were full-time employees. There's nothing in the Fair Labor Standards Act which says that they have to actually work 80 hours. The Act says that they must supervise two full-time employees, and they all were full-time employees, and that was undisputed in the record. So,
did you raise the sole charge exemption in your pretrial? Or did you raise it?
It wasn't. We didn't. It was raised by.
Did you ever raise it in your amended complaint?
Your Honor, it was raised by implication because the.
No, did you raise it?
And not specifically. We didn't refer to the fact that the. Because the reason being that would only apply if the long test was applicable. Here we're dealing only with a short test. That factor shouldn't even be considered by the court in view of the fact that the short test is applicable. What we said was in our pleading, in our affirmative defenses.
What did Judge Lyon rule on that?
Did he rule on that point?
Yeah.
Did he say that
he could not avail himself of the exception?
Because
it never raised the exception in the pretrial order?
I think there was some mention, as I recall, in his decision. I don't think there was any specific ruling. But the fact is that all the evidence came in. I mean, whatever may have been in the pretrial order, even if it was required, or even in our pleadings. I mean, all this evidence came into the record without objection. Now, we're dealing with a record that was in the trial court, and that is really what we're appealing from here. And all that evidence about the fact that he was paid more than $250 a week, that he customarily and regularly supervised more than two full-time employees, which automatically brought into play the short test, and that would automatically exclude this percentage matter, whether or not he exceeded 40% of non-exempt work. That simply didn't apply to this case. So there's no need for us to raise it specifically here under the facts of this case. Now, and by the way, you know, it's interesting also that on this point, that Judge Lina Weber By the way, am I in my rebuttal time now?
Yes, you are.
Oh, maybe I better, I'll...
You got about half a minute.
Well, I better reserve it then, Your Honor.
All right.
Thanks.
Please the court, my name's John Billhorn, and I represent Mr. Jackson in this Fair Labor Standard Act case. What Goldstein has tried to do here, Your Honors, is to make a lead car wash attendant an executive under the Fair Labor Standard Act, and they've got a very strict burden of proof to do that. I submitted in the briefs the Mitchell versus Kentucky Finance case, Arnold versus Ben Kanowski, the Idaho sheet metal case that says that the narrow confines of exemptions under the Fair Labor Standards Act are not to be expanded by implication, and that they must plainly and unmistakably come within the exemption's meaning if they are, if an exemption is to be found. Now, the facts found by the district court here are very, very sound facts, and none of them, I submit, are going to be found to be clearly erroneous. The whole context of what Goldstein's defense here is in trying to make a lead car wash attendant a executive should be viewed in the context of what Goldstein did with their gas station managers. The gas station managers and the assistant gas station managers were part of a U.S. Department of Labor investigation. The assistant managers were found to be non-exempt, and Goldstein owed them back overtime wages. Some of them were part of this case under the representative class action provisions early on. All of those went away either by judgment or settlement. The gas station managers were found to be bona fide exempt executive employees, and that's the group that Mr. Jackson got lumped into. That's the square hole that the round peg of Mr. Jackson got shoved into. And Mr. Adamczyk couldn't have said it any better than Mr. Adamczyk did at page 113 of the transcript when I asked him at trial about the exempt finding of the gas station managers. He said to me, well, that's a whole different story. It's an entirely different business. That's where Goldstein missed the mark with Everett Jackson. They showed him to the Department of Labor as a manager in the gas station sense, an entirely different business by Mr. Adamczyk's own admission, and what he was really doing was sharing duties at a car wash with other workers.
A car wash only, is that right?
A car wash only. There was one other facility, I think, in the Goldstein empire that had a car wash attached to the gas station. This was a car wash only facility. Now, what Judge Leinenweber got to do was observe the demeanor of Mr. Adamczyk. And I will tell you, from the cross-examination standpoint, he's the most difficult trial witness I've had in my young 15 years. But he's a large man, shaved head, goatee, with an attitude of a U.S. Marine, and he gave me everything I could deal with on cross-examination. That's the presence that the man had in the courtroom. That's the presence that he had on a day-to-day basis with Mr. Jackson, and that's why Judge Leinenweber found him to be the man who was in charge of that gas station facility, or that car wash facility. Mr. Jackson had to check with him for hiring and firing. Mr. Jackson had to check with him in terms of rates to pay, the compensation for the other employees. And if you didn't believe that Mr. Adamczyk was in charge of the Goldstein empire, all you had to do was ask him, because he was very proud and very...
The question is whether he was in charge of the car wash.
That's right.
Not the empire.
That's right.
We all know that that your client had a boss. The question is how much of a boss.
That's right. And the testimony was that that Adamczyk had a close watch on that car wash facility. He visited it from time to time. He would correct things that Mr. Jackson did. The testimony was that one time Jackson fired somebody. That person knew to go over Jackson's head and go back to Mr. Adamczyk. Mr. Adamczyk, in fact, reinstated him. Another situation was just the opposite. Jackson hired somebody without checking with Mr. Adamczyk. The evidence was that Adamczyk fired him the next day.
Forget seems your client, he thought he had some kind of authority in hiring and firing.
He ventured outside of that once or twice, Your Honor, and Mr. Adamczyk asserted his authority that showed that he was in control. An executive employee just doesn't reach to the extent of a car wash attendant like Mr. Jackson was. Counsel's correct in citing the short test. Two things, whether management and supervision was a primary duty and whether he customarily and regularly directed the work of two or more full-time employees. Now, what Gotain didn't introduce at all in this case was any evidence of what percentage of Mr. Jackson's duties were managerial in nature. Jackson said that he estimated it was about 5%, dealing with the payroll, faxing things to the home office, actually directing and supervising the work of employees that he wasn't, in fact, doing side by side, such as planting the flowers, picking up garbage, sweeping, those ministerial type of tasks that do not raise to the level of an executive employee. But Gotain had absolutely no evidence at all. They didn't even attempt to say that 50% or more, which there's no pat amount that it's on a case-by-case basis, but Gotain presented no evidence whatsoever. The only other factors that you have to take into consideration under primary duty test is whether or not he was free from supervision. Clearly, Adam Check was around all the time and would correct things whenever Mr. Jackson did it outside of the realm of what his authority was. And then the comparable wage rate. If you do the math, Jackson's hourly wage rate came out to about $6.67. The people who worked there with him on an hourly basis, to which no exemption was claimed, they were at about $6. The regular and customary standard here is an interesting one. 76% of the time in the Daylight Dairy Products case was not considered to be enough time, and the court found there that that was not regular and customary. There's no percentage definition in any of the case law. I regularly and customarily take my children to Florida in the winter to see their grandparents. I think that that's 7 out of the 8 last years that I've done that. That's regularly and customarily. Usually, I submit the term usually is more than 50%. Perhaps often means 75 to 80%. But customarily and regularly, I submit, has got to reach into the high 80s percentile, and here the evidence showed that there were two or more full-time employees there only 67% of the time. They argue that, well, if we schedule them for more than 80 hours, but they don't show up or they're sent home early because it's raining or it's summer and no one's washing their car, that it doesn't matter then. All we have to do is schedule them for 80 hours. There's absolutely no authority anywhere in the case law for that. And I suggest that the reason why the equivalent of two full-time employees is further qualified by putting 80 hours on that mark is just so we don't have what the defendant is arguing here would be appropriate to do, and that is for an establishment to schedule them for 80 hours, but it doesn't matter if they work that many hours. You could fit somebody into that category of a manager simply by having a schedule that says that more than 80 hours work of time is supposed to be being worked and he's supposed to be supervising it without any regard to whether that actually happens. Judge Leinenweber struggled a little bit, and I think the parties did too, as to this requirement of whether or not Mr. Jackson would have had to have been present for that 80 hours of supervision, or whether or not it was enough that the people were working, whether their work hours counted when he wasn't physically present to supervise them. And we never came to an answer to that question because there's some split in the case law, different circuits talk about it differently, but Judge Leinenweber said defendant's own Exhibit 4 showed that only in 67% of the weeks that Jackson was working at their car wash facility was there more than 80 hours worked by employees that were there with him.
What do you mean overlapping?
Pardon me?
Overlapping? 80 hours? I mean, he's not expected to be there 80 hours in a week.
No, well, two employees would be, two full-time employees would be 40 hours each. So, yes, it could certainly be overlapping.
And because, as I understand it, it was about a 12-hour day or something there, 9 to 9 or something like that.
Right. If he had two employees working there together in 1 hour, that would count as 2 hours towards the 80 threshold. But the 80 threshold has to be met. You can't just schedule them for that without regard to whether or not they worked. The school
so
chart...
It's possible that you couldn't have a manager then.
It is possible you couldn't have a manager.
Because they're just by the nature of the business of... If there's no work, they go home, so to speak. If it's raining, for example, that's a day off.
Sure. There was testimony that there was time Jackson was at the car wash by himself because it was just either it was because he opened early in the morning and that shift hadn't started yet. There were gaps maybe in a shift where someone had left. The other shift hadn't gotten there yet. Jackson would be there by himself.
But he still got paid.
Oh, sure. He still got paid under the salary basis, which is what we assert was inappropriate. Jackson.
But if the place is closed and he's on salary, he still get paid.
Well, if the place is closed.
Yeah, it's raining.
You know, I don't remember evidence, Your Honor, that they'd actually close it. I remember that it'd slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps there was times that they closed it. I don't recall that in the evidence. They talked about slow down time. They talked about heavy times in the winter when people are washing their car more often than in the summer, but I don't recall it being closed or not. I just want to talk about one more thing quickly, and that's the liquidated damages ruling that Judge Leinenweber made. And he found that my opening comments talked about how Gotain inappropriately grouped Mr. Jackson into these gas station managers, and they want to hang their hat on this liquidated damages thing, which in this circuit, liquidated damages are almost a certainty. They're the rule rather than the exception. And that's where Judge Leinenweber found their conduct to be not based upon good faith after reasonable inquiry, because Don Abanchek himself knew, as he said at trial, the gas station business was an entirely different business, and Mr. Jackson was at the car wash. That's why liquidated damages, the double damages, were appropriately entered by Judge Leinenweber in the trial court. Unless there's any
Thank
questions,
you, counsel.
That's all I have.
All right. You have half a minute, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Or 1 minute.
Two or three points to cover. First, on the question of Abanchek being his general manager, I think that the testimony, again, was contradicted in the record. He was the general manager of the entire operation of Gotain. They had 21 stations. He testified he only came to the station once a week, sometimes even less than that. The cases clearly hold that this does not detract from the fact that you have a manager in charge of the station. The fact that you have a general supervisor to whom he answers does not take away his status as a manager of that particular facility. The uncontradicted testimony in the record is, I urge this upon the court, was that Jackson did hire and fire and discipline. It's all in the record. We have a whole set of exhibits of disciplinary reports that he himself prepared and sent into the company. Just the one final point, and then I see my time is up. The one point that counsel for Jackson did not address, and I think this is really basic to this case, is that the loss, I think, is established clearly that Gotain is entitled to that one exec manager in this type of facility. And to take away Jackson's status as that exempt manager is, in effect, to take away the right of Gotain to really have a manager of that facility. I don't think the Fair Labor Standards Act provides that, and I think the case so holds. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, counsel.